I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are here to wrap up our conversation on the Homeopathic Healing of Blank series, and we're here rejoined by Brittany, who both started this series with us and is now ending it, to talk about sensory issues. And so, like we have tried to do on most of the episodes, I'd like to start where we just get like an overview of what sensory issues you guys dealt with in your home before homeopathy. And then we'll share a little bit about what some general patterns are, some expectations, some things, what it will often look like in the average state. And then you guys can share some of your experience about what it actually played out like in your homes. And before we get started, I just want to remind everybody, we are again talking about just like the sort of average trends that we see, the general trends. And so this is not necessarily what's going to play out in your home or in your child. You could be on the outside of what we're describing. We're just talking about patterns that we see for a large number of people. So just because you see a different pattern doesn't mean that homeopathy is not going to help, and also doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with the strategy that you're taking. Just if you have concerns, always talk to your homeopath to see if there's something that maybe needs a little bit more attention. We'll leave it there. So Brittany, since you're joining us, why don't we start with you and sharing any issues that you had with sensory sensitivity in your home?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess it kind of depends on which one of the four of us you're talking about, because, you know, of course, we've realized that we all have some sort of sensory issue here or there. So, but I think the one that made like the most lasting impression on me was my oldest son, Gatlin, with his onset. He had a very abrupt overnight onset. And the biggest thing for him, and the thing that just stands out so profoundly to me, is one morning he woke up and was just so angry, like the rage hit. But also the most marked thing was he was screaming about it being too bright in the morning when he was trying to eat his breakfast. No, it was hurting his eyes. It was hurting his eyes. So we turn off, you know, most of the lights. No, it's too bright. Got a pair of sunglasses here. I'm thinking, all right, magic sunglasses are going to work, right? We put them on. No, it's too bright. He literally had to sit there and could not tolerate anything other than absolute pitch black with like just like the tiny little bits of light from like, you know, the hall light way over here and the microwave light, you know, things like that. It had to be nearly pitch black for him to be okay. The light was so sensitive. And then I'm sure many moms can relate to the socks, right? I would have paid millions and millions of dollars that I didn't have for the right sock. Yeah. Socks and that sensitivity to light when we first started was just unreal.
Mm-hmm. Jody, what about you?
Trying to think. I'm like, oh, I like know all of mine really well, but I'm trying to think of Avery's. And Avery for sure was the shoes and the socks, mostly the socks, getting them just right. But one thing that really stood out with Avery, and this was like, she had a little bit of this before pans. She didn't like her foods mixed together. Like, she's not a casserole kid. But then when pans came along, this became like exponentially more, like where she was not, like even like the placement on the plate mattered. And she didn't want different textures and like mushy textures. She couldn't do like bananas and stuff like that. And then with my younger daughter, hers was like she didn't want to wear clothes for like ever and ever. She just didn't want to put clothes on because she was uncomfortable in them for 47 different reasons. So she was just like, I'm not allowed to publicly show pictures of her before she was 5 years old. That's just kind of how it went in our house. And so clothes were a big one for her. And then I think she had some sensory stuff with like every night we would have to go through this really long routine of getting the blanket on her properly. And the soft side, the like extra, extra soft side had to be facing down. And it was just this whole process to get her feeling that like she needed to feel when she went to sleep. And then there's my stuff, which I've had forever, which is light sensitivity and extreme, extreme sound sensitivity. little this, little
I gotta
that.
Say, Jody, I still, you sent me a blanket one year for a holiday or birthday or something like that, that has two different textures on it. And I wonder if it might be the same one that you've had in your house. And I still am like, nope, we have to have the right side. And so is my daughter. And so I don't know if I would classify that as a sensory thing, other than maybe if it having to be the exact right position.
I agree with you, but also like every Pan's parent will tell you this, there's like different levels of that because it's how I am with mine. And I'm also a little weird about making the bed and it having to be like perfect, but I think that's like normal and healthy because I want it to feel a certain way when I get in. But like this was like a whole nother level where we would go into like almost a rage if we weren't getting it right. So it was just like, I agree with what you're saying for sure. I think that's a normal human thing, but this was like,
well, I think that it's really just important that we do maybe add that on. So if you guys could share a little bit more of that detail, not just what the sensory sensitivity is, but the reaction to it, because I think that can really bridge the gap where we see something that goes from a normal preference to a pathologic problem, right? Because there's some people who are trying to figure out if what they're dealing with their child might be PANS, and seeing some of these things, and perhaps it's more of a behavioral or like a parenting intervention could be useful instead of antibiotics or anti-inflammatories, and even homeopathy for that matter. And so having a little bit more richness to the examples for what the sensory issues or sensory sensitivity can contribute to. So Brittany, you want to share a little more?
Yeah, absolutely. For Gatlin, it was always rage. Everything ended up resulting in rage. If it was, there was nothing, absolutely nothing that could tone it down, right? Unless it was an absolute perfection of whatever it was. So like the lights had to be completely off. There was no degree to which they were okay. There was no adjustment period. Like, you know, when you walk out into the sun from like a dark room or something like that, there was no adjustment period. There was no making it better. It had to be pitch black. And then with like the socks, and he had a thing where things had to be tight enough. He would cinch his belt really tight, and shoes had to be pulled. The laces had to be really, really tight. And if it wasn't, it was like almost like I imagine like bugs crawling over his skin or something. He just like couldn't be okay in his body unless it was right. It was just this absolute intolerance. And then, of course, like with that came like the rage and the meltdowns and the things after that. And then with my youngest, I didn't talk about him. He has much different sensory things. Jody, he has the food thing. I'm always like, when he goes to friends' houses, I'm like, if you're making anything mixed together, like spaghetti is where that stops for him. But anything else mixed together, just make him a peanut butter and jelly because he can't do the mixed things. He is very much things have to be soft. So like athletic clothes, dry fit clothes, jeans. He won't do jeans. And he does like the squirmy thing with him. He just like can't tolerate it until it's like off of his body. There's no degree of, well, I can tolerate this if kind of thing. It's just an extreme, extreme in to it. Now, like my oldest Gatlin, he's gotten to the place to where like lights don't bother him. Actually, in the morning, he requests that the first thing I do is flip his lights on as soon as he wakes up now. You know, all of those things. And there are some things every once in a while, like maybe when he's feeling overwhelmed or something like that, that something will bother him. But like the tightness, like it used to be, or the lights, the way it used to be, those reactions to those things aren't there anymore. Good. I think.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the process of what it was like to get to that place where we've recovered in just a minute. Jody, any other detail you want to share with the sensory stuff?
I think Avery, like hers would kind of snowball into not necessarily rage, but like if the socks weren't working out, then everything would start not working out. The ponytail wouldn't be perfect, that, whatever it might be. And then that would like kind of roll into school refusal a little bit because we just couldn't get out the door. Those two weren't the same thing, but it was just a piece of why it was so hard to get her out the door in the morning and to school. And I can't think of anything with Gwen.
Yeah. Well, you shared that like it could build to the point of rage if the...
Oh, yeah. With her, it was like a mess. Like hers was just like just out of control kid.
Yeah. And that's an important thing is that it's not always going to look like rage. For many kids, it will. For many kids, rage is stemming from one of the things happening with the nervous system. And we talked about that with Brittany on a previous episode. One of the things, though, is that there's so many ways that it can present where you've got the sensory sensitivity. And for us as adults, we get sensory sensitivity and we have the social learning to rage that might be coming up from it. But then it could start to look like short tempered. It could look like distraction. It could look like, you know, lack of focus because of the feeling overwhelmed by the things that are stimulating your sensory systems. So it could look like a lot of different things. I'm trying to think how often I've seen anxiety show up. I mean, sometimes anxiety can show up as a presentation accompanying the sensory sensitivity. So it's just always good to explore what that could be. So we've touched on a lot of different sensory sensitivities that come up with kids. You guys have talked to so many moms in your work that you've done with Resilience Naturopathic. So if I'm missing any, just shout it out there so we can just get some blanket beyond your personal experience in your homes, what sort of sensory issues can come up and be seen in Pans Pandas. So clothing issues are a big one where either, you know, Brittany's son had the opposite of what we typically see with needing it very, very tight. Most kids need it to, like, they're too sensitive to clothing, and it's more like, you know, Jody's younger daughter, that you got to be naked because nothing feels good. And so, or one set of clothing is like the safe, comfortable clothing, and it has to be washed every night because it's the only thing that feels comfortable on their body. So not wearing jeans, that's a common one, because I can't tell you how many times we see people celebrating that their kid's finally wearing jeans. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I also don't understand why we're celebrating jeans, because jeans are not comfortable. They're leg jails. And I personally think that we just need to have an adult Pans friendly clothing line that is just soft, flexible, comfortable clothes, but still look cute. And we're allowed to go out in public wearing them because they're not sweatpants. That's just, you know, if there's a clothing designer listening, I will be your first customer, because I agree with the Pans kids. They're right. Everybody else is wrong. No more leg jails. All right. Yes. Food sensitivities are a big one. And I'm not talking about food reactivity and like food allergies. I'm not talking about they eat this food and we see a flare start. I'm talking about I don't want to eat this food because it's too crunchy or it's too slimy or it's too soft. But then leading to a bigger thing than just like, I don't like this. Like, I don't like eggplant because it's too slimy. It's gross. I don't like it. So beyond that, I'm just not going to eat it. It's a substantially bigger issue, right? We can have some of the OCD can start to show its way into some of the food stuff with like whether things mix or if they touch, that kind of thing, certain colors. And then we're also leaning into some of the more spectrum spaces too, with some of the preferences that can come up. But textures and tastes are a big one. And so these are the kids that will get to the point that if you get a different brand of chicken nuggets, they can tell and they're not going to be okay with it. Or if you cook it 2 seconds too long, if you're, you know, using the microwave, they can tell because there's just enough of a shift in the way it tastes or the texture that it's not okay. So there's also sensory sensitivities to the environment, which you guys have brought up a lot. So it can be lights, it can be sounds, it can be odors, lots of different things that can come up with just increased sensitivity. Want to bring up it can also be the opposite. So we always think about sensory sensitivity being heightened sensitivity or heightened connection to our senses. It can be the opposite. So it can be painlessness in complaints that are normally painful. If you've got that, that's actually a really good symptom for your homeopath to know. It can be not smelling anything that other people can smell. It can be needing it to be the brightest it could possibly be. We also have some things that's with like temperature, where it's not necessarily so much sensory. It's more about the dysregulation of the temperature controls, the internal thermostat, if you will, that can occur when we're dealing with brain inflammation. But you're going to see kids who are also running really hot all the time and they want to wear shorts outside when it's 23 degrees. And that's more common than the kids who are really sensitive to the cold when you're dealing with Pans Pandas. So these are all important things to share. Like the sensory sensitivities, especially if you've got a very specific sensory sensitivity, it can be helpful in selecting a homeopathic remedy to help you move in the right direction. It's unlikely in most cases, with the potential caveat of the painlessness of complaints normally painful. That one's a pretty darn useful sensory alteration. but most of them are not going to be like, this is the thing and it's going to get the answer for us. But it can really help triangulate to get to the right remedy if there's specific sensitivities or specific places, even to the degree of I'm really sensitive to tight things around my neck, but around my waist, I'm okay, or the opposite. You know, I can handle it. You can give me a turtleneck all day long, but don't put anything around my waist. You know, that's neck jails.
Breathe talking about it.
Neck jails and leg jails. I'm not a fan of any of them. The only other thing I have put a note down here to just add for like a full picture understanding is that there are going to be people who are just going to be wired in a way that they are more sensory sensitive anyway. So there's an episode that we did several seasons ago with Dr. Karen Lamb about highly sensitive people that would be good to potentially check out. So people who are highly sensitive have just a greater reactivity to things in their sensory field. So the external things and potentially internal things as well, where they're just feeling things faster, easier, deeper, and that the nerves are basically just firing a lot more frequently and rapidly and taking a lot of things in. And then, of course, we get the overlap with ADHD, where we have some similar things. And Dr. Karen Lamb and I have had some personal conversations about whether or not where the overlap of ADHD and highly sensitive people who are more sensory seeking, more extroverted, really is. And it's a pretty blurry line of where we get into highly sensitive person and ADHD. And so these are things to just take into consideration if you've got some pre-existing awareness that you have ADHD or that you've just were born a highly sensitive person and that was in your field of vision before PANS or PANDAS showed up. Homeopathy is probably not going to change those things, but PANS and PANDAS can really, really amplify them. And so you can take somebody who is already more sensitive to their surroundings, is the first one to smell when the milk has gone bad, and throw in PANS, PANDAS, and they're going to tell you that the milk has gone bad at the neighbor's house. So it's going to take something that's already a predisposition with the wiring and how they just are as a human and amplify it to a higher level, more problematic level. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely. You just described me like perfectly to a T.
And probably a lot of people too, you know? Yeah. And so I will say that there is a really decent number of people that ADHD and sensory issues are exclusively triggered by PANS. And those are things that will resolve and they tend to fluctuate. If we've got the more static state where I'm good, I'm feeling good, not having flares, but I'm still really sensitive to my surroundings, it might be more about how you're wired. For the most part, the healing process tends to be on the faster side with the sensory stuff, in my experience. For most people, we're talking in that this might be one of the early symptoms that you see start to resolve along with rage calming down and anxiety starting to calm down, that we'll see the sensory stuff starting to improve, not to the point of genes, because genes, come on, guys, I'm okay with them now that we're back into the wide leg genes, but like they have to be obscenely wide to be okay, you know? So genes take a while to get to. That's why we get such celebrations. What we're going to get to more is that there's greater acceptance of the softer clothes, right? So instead of having the one outfit you have to wash every single night because that's the only one that feels comfortable, we're going to have 3 or 4 different pairs of pants that can be worn, a couple of different pairs of underwear, you know, just a couple of shirts, that kind of thing. We're going to see greater acceptance of layering and things like that you need for just comfort in the different temperatures. Really big reactions to some of the environmental stimuli. It's not a super slow progress, but it's not just a boom, it's not a light switch. It's usually a gradual, but still pretty quick to move type of thing. Foods, if we're not dealing with ARFID, if it's really just a sensory, like a texture thing, then that can also move on the faster side and see more food acceptance and broader interest in foods open up faster. If we're dealing with ARFID, we've talked about that in another episode, that's a lot more connected to OCD, which does tend to be slower to recover. All right. I'm going to stop talking because I've been talking for a bit. Let's hand it back over to you guys. Brittany, what was the healing journey, healing process like for your family? And we should start off by saying your family is a long healer family that likes to take its time. to get where they're going.
My boys like to do everything the hard way, including healings. I am sitting here thinking, and like, to be perfectly honest, it's kind of blurry for me as far as like how we healed. I want to say it was one of the things that absolved on the quicker side for us, because I don't remember it being particularly longstanding and profound for us. Like the rage kind of lasted a while for us. Anxiety, like other things like that, lasted longer for us. And I don't remember the sensory stuff being particularly long for us. And then, like you mentioned, like our family, we are the people who are just wired to be more sensitive. You know, there are still things that Gatlin, like, he doesn't have to have his belt cinched super tight, but like his baseball pants are like painted on. Like, this kid wants tight baseball pants. You know, Torben, we've figured out, like, you know, there are times where he will tolerate khakis if we have to, like, go somewhere nicer or things like that. There's one pair of jeans I found that he will wear, but they're like butter. It's ridiculous. They're not even jeans. You know, things like that. That we're getting there, but sensory issues were more of a bigger deal for him, like long standing, if that makes sense. He kind of had more issues. Gatlin's were very big. He had more issues that weren't super huge. So his kind of lasted a little bit longer, but overall, I think those were the ones that kind of absolved quicker for us.
I think maybe we don't remember as well because the sensory stuff isn't like the big, huge fires.
Right. For us, it wasn't. It definitely compounded things, absolutely. But it was the sensory stuff was just like a catalyst to the rage kind of for us. You know, that was the bigger overarching thing that affected a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I feel like I don't remember that well either, just because the sensory stuff was, it was like a little contributor to the bigger stuff, the rage and stuff like that. And with Avery, I remember it, like, I think I remember it going away a little bit quicker. And with my younger daughter, it stuck around a little bit longer. Dr. Barr, what you were saying a minute ago, I like that you brought that up. Avery was a sensory kid before PANS. PANS shot it through the roof for a while. And then we got to homeopathy, did some healing with homeopathy. And then towards the end of homeopathy, when my brain was still in the mindset that homeopathy is going to fix literally every speck of anything that I feel like isn't 100% healed. And then I kind of had my come to Jesus and realized that not everything needs to be fixed, nor is homeopathy going to do it. And this is a thing, like Avery's still, she's a highly sensitive kid, period. She's a deep feeler. She's a very intuitive, I don't know what the word is I was going to say, but she's just like a sensitive being. And she still does have some of that food sensitivity, but it's not anything that like makes her go into a rage or is problematic in her life whatsoever. You know, she eats a healthy diet now. And so it's still part of who she is. Homeopathy didn't change that, but it alleviated the suffering that was coming along with it, the struggle and all of that that was coming with it. Yeah. So, and I'll say personally, for my own sensory stuff, like I spent almost my entire life being so incredibly overwhelmed. I mean, I didn't quite understand why, and learning more about myself and how I function and move in the world, and understanding that sounds and lights are part of what's making me overwhelmed. So learning that was great, but also like, I don't know what I expected with my own healing. But going through homeopathy myself has like lifted so much of that. And it feels freeing. Like there's still stuff I feel overwhelmed about, but it doesn't have as much to do with my environment and like the lights and the sounds and the like all of the things. So it's like I can breathe easier because I don't feel like super freaked out by those things.
I think homeopathy gave me the capacity to cope with it. You know what I mean? It was now when I recognize, instead of when I'm cooking dinner and the Vena Hood is going and the TV's loud and the kids are yelling and stuff, and my husband comes up and wants to hug me, instead of being like, why are you touching me? I can turn around and be like, hey, I'm overwhelmed right now. Like, I love you so much. Can I hug you later? My husband, whose love language is physical touch, wants to, like, to me, I'm like, oh, no, it's too much. So I like how you said that, Jody. Like, it just gives the capacity to be able to deal with that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes the edge off and unlocks the door to give access to coping strategies, navigate things a little bit easier. I love that you both brought up that you don't really remember exactly how the healing process went, because you're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. It is, for most people, unless it is an absolute, like if they are not allowed to ever have any light on in their house kind of thing because of that, it's for most people, that's not the most noticeable thing. It's the outcome because of the sensory sensitivity, and because rage or anxiety or distraction or focus issues are just triggered and made more intense because of the sensory stuff. The sensory stuff is not the only reason that those exist. So we tend to still see the bigger symptom that we get triggered with the sensory things still present, even if the sensory trigger is no longer a problem. And so it can be harder to notice because it is often not the main focus of what's going on. We also have the extra complicating factor that because a lot of people do have family connections with how sensory sensitive they are, because it's just, you know, genetic wiring and whatnot, that sometimes I think that the sensory, if like a parent is in more a more sensory space or having a harder time with their sensory regulation, it can sometimes be harder to notice when their kiddo is not having as much of an issue because we're feeling overwhelmed by the things that are problematic for us. Does that make sense?
It does. And this is where working with the same provider that your kids are working with comes in super handy, I feel like, because we are all a hot sensory mess in my house. And our provider understands how if my sound sensitivity is through the roof, but I got a kid that's ticking 24/7, like it all kind of ties together.
Yeah. And that can also be one of those clues, like once upon a time it was with us when you still worked with me, Jody, where your sensory sensitivity was going through the roof and it made you think your kid needed a change to the remedy instead of you needing the change, because you were more, your sensory notches were turned up to an 11. And so like you thought your kid was doing worse, but it was you who was just being very sensitive to them doing okay. And I point that out frequently in our conversations, just because it's a really good example that sometimes what we are seeing and what we're reacting to, especially with something like PANS that can trigger so many emotions for the people who have to live with it day in and day out, that it can be hard to see sometimes what's happening to you versus what's happening to your child. And the sensory stuff is one of the places that it can get pretty sticky with figuring out which way is it happening? Are they actually doing worse, or am I just more sensitive to them in general and they haven't changed, or they're actually doing better? So that's just something to be aware of for yourself, whether you're getting treatment or not, just so that you can evaluate when you're sharing how your child is doing, that having that awareness for yourself can really make a big difference so that you don't accidentally derail the progress because you're trying to treat yourself by treating your child, if that makes sense. Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts on healing of sensory stuff with PANS?
Think so.
Okay. All right. I think we got everything that I wanted to make sure we covered today. So thank you so much for coming back and sharing one last little bit for your family and how things are. And I guess lastly, where are you guys at right now? Brittany already shared like things are a lot better, still needing to wear painted on pants, but not having meltdowns with things, able to have like the sensory exposures that used to be a no-go. Anything else you want to share about where you guys are at now with your kids and how they handle the sensory stuff?
I think it's interesting that like my youngest, now he recognizes that like sensory input helps regulate him. So like he will ask me to go outside and swing because that really helps him. Or mm-hmm. last night we were at a baseball lesson. He was struggling. He was like, Mom, can you push on me? And the coach was like, what? And he laid down on the ground face first. And I just like deep pressure on all of the big muscle groups in his body. And his coach was like, what? I'm like, no, it helps him. It will regulate him. He'll be better afterwards. And he was like, okay. You know, it's funny how you go from being so unregulated to now they can recognize that like this particular sensory input helps me regulate, kind of thing.
Good. I'm the biggest problem now. Like my kids are good.
True in my house too.
It's me. Yeah. Everybody's got to give me grace now because I go through my moments still with my own healing where I'm like, oh, okay, I'm good. And then the next day I'm like, oh my God, turn the big light off. So it's the girls are good though.
Yeah. Yeah. It just made me think of something that we should throw in there. I hate to point any fingers, but you know, when we go through puberty, when you go through puberty or cougar puberty,
puberty.
Yep, that's what I call it too. I love that she said that.
I know,
so happy.
It can change their sensory sensitivity. So puberty and cougar puberty both can change sensory sensitivity. So depending on where you're at in the healing process with PANS pandas or with your own PTSD from PANS pandas, when you have those big hormone shifts and things start to go a bit crazy, it can throw a little bit of a wrench and twist up the knob a little bit more on the sensory stuff and have it come in a more chaotic and unpredictable space. So sometimes something that will be fine will not be fine the next day because you just had a big swing in where you're at with estrogen or progesterone or anything like that, particularly with women, of course, not as much of a, not so much that with males, but that's something to just keep in mind too. So if you are starting to see that you were doing better with the sensory stuff and then suddenly not doing so well anymore, you might just want to say, where are we at with like the hormone changes that could be contributing? So, all right. And on that note, we'll stop talking about all my things with leg jails and cougar puberty and all the random ridiculous things that we had shared today. You can tell that we're getting toward the end of the season, huh? Like we're a little unhinged. So
I don't think there's anybody that's not going to relate to that though. It's yeah. like, yep.
Yeah, yeah, we're in the right community to talk about cougar puberty.
Think you're good.
Well, I hope that this was a helpful series to give a little bit more insight on the specific symptoms that you might be wondering about. Will this ever change? When will this change? What can I expect? Is this normal? And just remember that all of the things that we've talked about through this entire series, we're talking about generals, we're talking about general patterns, averages. You could be on the opposite side of things. You could have sensory things that last you for until the very, very end, especially if you're in the HSP or ADHD realm, or if you have autism or another, you know, confounding factor. Or you could be like, oh, one remedy and it's just boom, it's gone. You know, like you could have a miraculous recovery like that too. So this is all just averages, and always talk to your provider about what's going on for your specific case if you've got any concerns. But don't forget to share those sensory concerns because they can really be helpful. All right. Thanks so much, ladies, for joining and chatting about this. And we got 2 more episodes left in this season. We got really excited about our next guest that we're going to have. And then we'll wrap up for this season and give you guys a bit of a break coming up into the summer. But we have some really good replays for you of some of our most loved episodes. So you won't want to tune out necessarily. Just tune in for a different reason over the summer. All right. Take care, everybody.
Bye, guys.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for PANS and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, pandas, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.